Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 14, delivered on October 8, 2015. The title of this lecture is Stock Valuation.
Today, stock valuation. A few preliminaries here to start with, that as I had told you, stock represents ownership, equity in a company, in a corporation. Now, there are two flavors of it. There's the common stock and the preferred stock. The common stock is sort of at the bottom of the rung. It's the one you think about when you think about stock. But common stock can come in different flavors itself, as I had explained to you before. You can have this insider common stock, Class A or something like that, that gets super voting rights on at the board of directors. And then you can have the Class B, which would be the kind that you could buy, that basically it can vote, but it just sort of sits back for the ride for the most part. But it has voting rights. Now, those voting rights that you have, you're going to buy some stock. 100 shares, a round lot, you'll hold it. You have the right to vote at the shareholders meeting. You can go to the shareholders meeting. You're an owner. Why would you? Well, probably for no reason, because your 100 votes, your 100 shares isn't going to make a tinker's dam when it comes to voting for the board of directors. What will happen is you will get a card in the mail. It will be called, it's a proxy. There's a proxy statement. We are the management. We are the board of directors. We are the wonderful people. Why don't you give us your votes? And you can give them your by proxy your votes so that they'll vote for themselves. Vote for us. Give us your shares so we can vote for ourselves because we're so wonderful. The proxy is so common. Interestingly enough, and it just used to get kind of frustrating at the level I was working at. But those proxy cards, hardly any small shareholders ever send in the proxy card. Some do, but some, they just see it and they throw it away. That's just, that. But again, even if you send it in, your votes are pretty darned minimal. Now, of course, in aggregate, small shareholders might have some power. And there are some activist organizations that buy stock, not much, but they'll buy it just so that they can go to the shareholders' meetings and raise a fuss about something. Sometimes it's an environmental group or an animal rights group or it's some other group that will just go and they'll have their say. They're not going to win anything. They're not going to win, but they're going to be able to be given their say under Robert's Rules of Order. The minority is allowed to speak. The majority must prevail. All that. So the proxy statement is out there. However, it can get interesting. This gets into some of the work that I did in M&A, where you actually have the insiders. You are the insiders. You have sent me a proxy card. Fill it out for us, and I assign you my vote so you can vote for your board of directors slate. But then you, woman, you are a predator corporation. You've been buying stock in this corporation for voting power. Now, at some trigger level, you have to notify the SEC as a public statement, we're buying more than 5% of the shares of this company. But you also would like to get my shares to vote with the voting power of your shares. So you would send me a competing proxy statement as a black knight. The black knight's going to come in there. Doesn't that sound cool? Yeah, I'm Batman. You're the black knight, okay? So what's going to happen is you're going to send me, you're going to say, he sucks. I mean, he is just ugly. He's a cat strangler, a dog beater, and a nose picker. And he has destroyed this corporation. Look at the performance of this stock. Vote for us. Join me or die. You want my votes so that with the stock that you've been acquiring, you get my proxy and a lot of other small-time proxies. And maybe a few hedge fund managers have got a decent slate. They're going to go with you because, yeah, this stock isn't performing. They're overpaying the management ridiculously. And the company is just sort of flopping around. So you might be interested in taking over with a hostile proxy move. So I could sign yours. Well, I could even get more interesting than that. Well, you have friends in big places. I mean, seriously, you have on speed dial people like Sarah Palin, Donald Trump. I mean, so you're going to call them and ask them to help you, okay? And they call their friends. And finally, we get around to you. You're a white knight. You're a white knight, and you're going to start buying in on the stock to acquire a position yourself. Now, that's going to push the stock price up. You're going to have to compete with that to try to acquire more shares. You're then going to acquire those shares to protect him in the vote, in the proxy vote, because you're going to send out a proxy. You're going to support his proxy, and you're going to say, "Well, we've got this big competitor, big friend of ours." Not that you're big, man. Oh my God, Jesus! You got that look on your face. I've learned in my life, don't ever say that. Okay, you got this important competitor that's now your friend, or this important partner now. And so you're going to have the white knight buying in on your shares, pushing the stock price up. Well, now I start feeling real gooey. Oh, you're making our stock price go up because you've got friends in high places. And you're going to say, okay, well, this kind of sucks. Do I just... And then you're going to have to read the play here because let's see how much pain she likes. Or you could say, FTS, walk away. You know, go back into the Godzilla, going back in the ocean, the hell with that, fighter jets and all that, I have enough of that. Or you might say, all right, let's have fun. I'm going to start buying in aggressively. As you buy in, what happens to the price? Goes up. Don't be quiet. You know, it goes up, man. Yeah, I know what I'm doing here. It goes up. Okay, well, you're going to have to pay more and more for that stock, more and more for it. And Junior here, Junior Goodloin is sitting here looking around saying, oh, this is really cool. Well, this is making you a little bit annoyed because you're starting to have to pay more for something for this guy that you know is a loser. So you might even start talking to him. You see, here's the deal. We're acquiring interest in your company. We're going to save your ass, but we're going to start wanting something for that. Now, they are going to simply fire you and send you back to McDonald's where you'll be one of the cooks. We'll keep you, but we're going to want a lot of concession from you if we're going to save your ass in this deal. So then the Black Knight and the White Knight are fighting over you. The Black Knight's going to just wreck you, kick you out with my votes and her votes. The White Knight might keep you in there, but they're going to put a lot of concessions on you. You might even be absorbed into their company ultimately or something like that. But that's how proxy wars can go. Proxy is a fascinating thing, and I got into them in a few cases, and they can get, back in the day, they could get physically dangerous in one case, and then the regulators back then just sat back and said, this is cool, it's better than wrestling. But anyway, preferred stock doesn't have a vote. Preferred stock doesn't vote. It's not that kind. Preferred stock, remember, gets its dividend before common, and if the dividend to preferred isn't paid, then the dividend to common won't be paid. And if it's cumulative preferred, then it's you have to catch up on all the old dividends to preferred shareholders before you can start paying dividends to the common shareholders. So the downside of preferred is you don't have any voting rights. But the upside is you get your dividend first. It's very similar, and I've said this before, preferred stock is very similar to a bond in the sense that there's this fixed coupon, And you get paid before dividends go to the common shareholders. It's unlike a bond because preferred stock, the dividend is paid forever. And it's also an ownership position. Here's the deal, and I've seen this in a few companies. I can't tell you how common this practice is. But cumulative preferred or preferred stock in more than a few that I've seen over time, if the dividend to the preferred isn't paid over a period of like 3, 4, 5 years, the preferred gets to a point, a person to the board of directors. Just, all right, that's enough. You're screwing up enough. So not paying the preferred on some preferred issues triggers a performance obligation that the company has to allow an appointee from the preferred shareholders to get on the board of directors. Now, what they would probably do in a situation like that is to put an 800-pound gorilla of a person on the board, someone who had influence in the business community, in the finance community, whatever, so that even though that was one board member, he or she would be outsized in influence on the board to get the board back on track, get the board to start kicking management in the butt so that the management got its act together and all of that. And again, remember, the board of directors represents the shareholders. They are the ones who hire and fire executive management. And so the leverage that the shareholders have on management is through the composition and philosophy of the board of directors. The problem, though, is that the board of directors in the modern American corporation has really lost touch with the shareholders other than for the biggest names, the biggest powerhouses among the shareholders, the hedge fund managers, the trust funds that have the big holdings. That's why you see these ridiculous executive compensation packages. The board of directors will say, yeah, we'll pay the CEO some ridiculous millions and millions of dollars, even though that CEO sucks. What's their incentive not to? What are you guys, normal shareholders, going to do? Go and kick their shins? They don't care what you think. They're going to do whatever is in their interest. And paying those CEOs and those top people ludicrously high salaries is something they do. It's just how it works. And that is different from how it works in European and Asian corporations, where the board of directors does not give excessive compensation packages in general to the executives. But there you go. That's our model. Is it going to change? Congress has tried a couple of times to punish and put extra taxes on executive compensations above certain amounts. It doesn't seem to be working. There's some fundamental disconnect that's going on in the American corporation between the board of directors and their incestuous relationship with the executive management and the shareholders out there, whatever it is. You see, understand, here's the deal. You're probably going to have extraordinary influence on the board of directors from the big holders of the stock, the fund managers, those multi-million dollar people. Now, that means that they are going to want the board of directors to appoint their kind of people, the kind of people who crawl to them, the kind of people who say, yes, sir, no, sir, to those people out there on Wall Street. So that means that the board of directors is answering to and hiring for those big shareholders out there in the private sector on Wall Street. So that's why you see that disconnect. The board of directors is taking its orders from these heavies on Wall Street, and those heavies on Wall Street want these big fancy names on the executive as executive management, and they'll tell the board of directors give them huge compensation packages. There you go, one way or the other. Now, as far as the math of this goes, it's actually, I showed this to you before, as is my as is my way, I've shown you the math of valuing stock before. I've shown you the formulas that are in. I dig it a little deeper this time, and then I take you up and I show you some real-world examples of it. Well, the first thing that I would want to do, the easiest one of all is preferred stock, valuing preferred stock. The easiest one of all is that because essentially a preferred stock represents a permanent cash flow. It just comes in that dividend every year. At least it should. It just comes in once a year, well, maybe more than that. Once a year, every year, forever. That is what we call a perpetuity. And the formula for a constant, a level perpetuity is ludicrously easy. The present value of the future expected cash flow of a perpetuity that has the same amount forever is the cash flow over the discount rate. The cash flow over the discount rate. Now, the discount rate is the part that you have to tease around. Later in the course, I'll show you the way that we oftentimes calculate a discount rate. It's called the capital asset pricing model. It's really a simple formula, but that's one of our favorites. Otherwise, we can just pull it out of our butts like sometimes I do in this class, a discount rate. But one way or the other, let me do something here real quick. I'm going to... Hang on here. Let me quickly finance. I'm going to pull up finance.yahoo. Okay, I'm going to do VNOK. Seriously? Oh, okay. Well, okay. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try something here. And okay. I'm going to take a preferred stock, VNOK. This is a preferred stock. It's a $25 par value. 5.7% coupon. By the way, this is actually a dividend, but it's called these days, we used to call it a dividend, but I notice in the screens these days they're calling it a coupon because it's so much like a bond. But it's really a dividend. Okay, so in other words, it's 5.7% of $25. Okay, now let me kill something here. Really? Drop that screen down. See if I can do this. For God's sake, it's not even going to let me do that crappy equipment here. Okay, look. Right now, the market is a good model with capital asset pricing model to pull the discount rate to use on this. I am going to call RCB... the discount rate commensurate with the risk of this stock right now looks to me to be about 8.50%. I'm guessing the market says this should be paying about 5.8%. Notice that the dividend is only 5.7%. So would you expect this stock to sell at a premium to par or a discount to par? What would you say? Give me a step. Madam, what would you say? If the market says you should pay 5.8%, but you're only paying 5.7%, is the market going to reward you or punish you? You're paying 5.7%. The market says you should pay 5.8%. You're paying less than what the market says you should. Huh? Yeah, it's going to sell at a discount because the market says you should be paying 5.8%. You're paying 5.7%, so the market's going to paddle you. You come to my art show. I want $500 for one of my artworks. You pay me $400. I'll sell it to you, but I'll spank you harshly several times. Oh, anyway,
My sir. Where the hell am I? I can't talk to you people normally. Let me get my calculator out here.
Okay, now, what this means is that $25 par, 5.7%,
I'd do 0.057 times $25.
And in other words, my ass. Oh, the dividend per share is $1.425. That's what you would get every year forever and ever if you had this stock. You see how this is preferred is actually a really nice investment vehicle for fixed income people. You buy it and then you just get your check every year. You buy 10,000 of these shares, you get a $14,000 check every year forever. And you wouldn't live forever, but that's the thing though. It's a perpetuity. And the formula for a perpetuity is right there. What's the price value of a perpetuity? Well, it would be cash flow, $1.425 divided by the discount rate, which right now the market seems to might be thinking about 5.8%. That's all you do. That's all you do.
Now, if I crank that out, divided by 0.058, 2457.
The market is selling at a little bit of a discount to par, about 43 cents discount to par. In other words, yeah, you should be paying us a little more than you are. So we're not going to put it quite at par. It's going to sell, as you said, at a discount to par. You use even the same terminology in these as you do with bonds. Okay, you see it? Well, let's really quickly see what the quote on VNOK is right now. Seriously? Oh, damn, I'm good. Shit. Yeah. Notice that they're low volume animals. They don't trade. They're not sexy, but, I mean, there you go. It's just parked there, a nice little. It is selling at a slight discount to par. The market's saying it should pay a little more. It's a little riskier than what the dividend is. The dividend is indicating a risk of about 5.7%. The market's figuring, you're a little bit low on that risk on that, Sparky. Now, this is, by the way, this is Vornado Realty Trust. Now, Vornado, as you would see, if you were to investigate Vornado or almost any of these companies like it, you would see that there's not just one preferred stock issue. They'll have a whole list of them with different coupons. And they represent oftentimes different projects. They were issued at different times for different projects. They'll have slightly different coupons. The covenants are usually about the same in them. And there are companies that just serially issue preferred stock to raise money for different projects. If you'll notice, you'll notice a lot of utility companies, real estate investment trusts, and things like that do these kinds of preferred stock. Again, they're not sexy at all, but they are favored by institutional investors who like that constant cash flow that's just always coming in every year, forever and ever. So, in other words, if I'm a company and I've got something that's like if relatively a safe type of investment, I might not go for a long ball with some massive IPO of common stock. I might just go make arrangements, get really good relationships with big money investors who like constant cash flow and say, okay, over the next 10 years, we'll be just issuing preferred stock as this project, and this project comes up. The investment banking community will say, okay, we'll fund them and then sell them to our investors, whatever it is, however you want to play it. But you'll see that like VNOK, there was a screen that I'm not sure I can find this real fast here, but I don't want to waste time on it. But like I said, the one thing is that these are not sexy at all. Okay. Stock.
Oh, here's the Yield Hunter. I've seen this. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I stumbled on. Look at this. There you go. There, now you can kind of get a see how a company will issue just serially issue preferred. What they're doing is each one of those would probably represent a project, and they fund the project by issuing more preferred stock. And clearly, the project would have to have a return higher than this dividend. But you're talking about a fairly low 5.7%. Surely the project that you're taking on can do better than that. And notice down here. Notice, see these? Homes, 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 real estate, power, 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 energy. These are very stable long investments over a long period of time. You can see it over and over again. The realty, property management, energy companies, CVS. Is that CYS? I was going to say, I didn't think they did that. But anyway, again, see, realty, and all that, bank, safe and stable investments, and that would be the kind of preferred stockholder issues. I don't want to go on and on about this, but I do want you to remember, when you start talking about investments in your own professional life, don't forget that there are these animals out there that are very much not talked about anymore, that are still quite typical. One other thing is, preferred stock can sometimes get adverse. There was a news article, I can't remember what the name of the company was. It was just today or yesterday. Some company had preferred stock. It hadn't paid a dividend in a long time. Company was in severe, back to the wall. It was a cumulative preferred, and it was like 10 years, I think. And the company finally just sat down with the preferred shareholder and said, look, we can't catch this up. We've got things that we want to do. We want to sell stock. We want to do projects. And so what they did was they made a deal with the preferred shareholders that the preferred shareholders would take these big chunks of common stock and surrender their preferred stock for it. It was essentially a stock swap out, and so that the company could essentially get back out from under this burden that it had been under for so long and get back to work on trying to raise money through stock offering, common stock offering, to come back. The preferred shareholders, essentially, they were in a position, well, what have we got to lose? We're never going to see our dividends again in the preferred. So they took the deal and got common stock in the stock swap. There you go. That's just one thing that you can do out there. Yeah. Now, the next thing to deal with here is the common stock. Now, common stock, I'll show you a limited model. And this is just something that we did quite a while back. And I'm just going to do it one more time for you just to kind of, I don't know, just to make sure that you know that. Suppose that you, sir, are not a reliable person. You're a fickle person. You'll buy a stock and you'll sell it a few years later. You're not in for a long-term relationship. You're just in for to find a friend with benefits. Dividends, that is. Okay? So you decide that you want to buy this stock, and you're going to hold it for 3 years. Now, here's where I have to bring up a couple of terms. There is a date when a board of directors declares the common stock dividend. Now, they will declare the dividend, and they will declare a date of record. Now, typically, this will be the same every year, but they still do it as a necessary formality. So I will, on October the 25th, the board declares a 25 cent per share dividend for shareholders of record on December 31.
Now, they could do it for different years, different dates, but usually they want to keep the markets, they don't want to surprise markets, they just do this every year. What this means is that they're going to say, all right, we're paying a 25 cents per share dividend this year. If you hold the stock on December the 31st, you get the dividend. The day after that, it's called X dividend. So what you will almost always see, but understand there's a lot of noise. There will be the price of the stock. As you approach December the 31st, the price of the stock will rise just slightly to reflect that 25 cent dividend. Because if you bought it on December the 30th, you'd get that 25 cents. So you probably, with most stocks, you can't see this happening. With preferred, you can actually see it. The reason you can't see it happening is because the stock's got so much noise in it going up and down because of market conditions. You won't actually, it's there, and we can actually tease it out with in a basic signal to noise theory machines. We can tease out a signal out of a lot of noise, just like it is done on circuit boards all the time on your music and audio players and video players. But underneath it, the stock is going to nudge its way upward toward that 25 cents as you get closer to the X dividend date. And then what will happen is immediately after the X dividend date, the stock will drop and it will no longer have that 25 cent dividend premium in it. It will no longer have that dividend premium in it until next year when it starts to do the same run toward the dividend date. It's just sort of like a cycle that goes boom and boom. And again, you can't see it with common stock very well because there's so much wild swinging. But it's there, and we can tease it out if we want to. And you can see it better with the dividend, with the preferred dividend. Preferred actually is not volatile at all, and it'll just go like this. You can actually see the waves in it as you approach the dividend date for the preferred. Okay, that's the background. Now, there you are. You have decided you're going to buy this stock. And let's say you are going to buy it right after the dividend. You're going to buy it X dividend. That way, we're just not messing with the possibility of a little bit of dividend premium in there. And so what will happen is you purchase ALC common, holding for 3 years the dividend will be as follows. Now you're buying it here at 0.0. So you're buying it immediately ex dividend. So at year one, you're going to get a 25 cent dividend. At year two, you're going to get a 30 cent dividend. And at year three, you'll get a 35 cent dividend. You expect to sell the stock at $7.45 right after the year 3 dividend. What's the price of the stock? What is the most you would pay for that stock now? And this is nothing but stock now. If you discount the cash flows at, let's say, 18%. Now, right away, see that this is nothing but a dumb lump sum present value formula. We're just going to take four present values back. In other words, we're going to have a present value of 25 cents 1 year out. We're going to add to that the present value of a 30 cent dividend 2 years out. We're going to add to that the present value of 35 cents 3 years out, and then we're also going to whack in there the $7.45 you think you're going to get in 3 years for it. And we're going to discount those. So in other words, the price of this is going to be nothing but the present value of 25 cents discounted at 1 plus 0.18 to the first power, plus 30 cents discounted at 1 plus 0.18 to the second power, plus 35 cents discounted back at 1 plus 0.18 to the third power, and then plus another $7.45 discounted back at 1 plus 0.18 to the third power. Now you notice those last two, I could put those together. They're the same denominator. I left them separate just so you can see that process of the discounting of the cash flows. Okay? Again, see these two, I'm going to just add those two together. I'm going to just put those two together. They got the same denominator. But I just want you to see that the price of anything is nothing but the present value of its future expected cash flows. You, sir, are nothing but the present value of your future expected cash flows. So get a job. No, seriously, that's what your value is in a capitalist system. That's all you are worth to the world. Okay? So get that income up there. Seriously. And then contribute to the alumni fund and all that. Anyway, now, just calculate it out, and please, for God's sake, do it with me so in case I get it wrong. 0.05. Okay, I got it. Okay, let's try this. 25 cents divided by 1.18 plus 30 cents divided by 1.18 squared plus, and then I'm going to put those two together. That's what? $7.80, 7.8 divided by 1.18 to the third power. And I get a current price of $5.17. $5.17 for this. That's the most that you would pay for this stock now. If you could, if you saw that it was like $5.12, yeah, you probably would want to buy it because you, at least in your judgment, you see that it's undervalued because you figured that it should right now in time have a price of 517, below that, you're getting a bargain. Above that, you say, no, I just won't buy it. That's how we do with every project in business. If we can pay less for the project than the present value of the future expected cash inflows, we say yes. If we have to pay more, we just say no. It's not worth it. That's how business works. Even if it's a pretty, sexy, glamorous, great project, no. That's just, and that's why how we proceed in our stock valuation. There you go. Now, let's make it a little more realistic here. I had told you in the past, previously, there comes a time when a company will want to start paying a dividend. Part of it is, honestly, you get the shareholders bitching at you about a dividend, and then sometimes, other times, and you just want to shut them up, so you start doing a dividend. Other times, you want to show that you've got the ability to pay a dividend, even though that dividend really isn't doing you a lot of good as a company, because you could do stuff with that money internally. You could invest it. But it doesn't hurt sometimes to just give out some money just to show we're strong enough that we can sustain giving you a little candy, and we're still able to keep proceeding on with our investments in your company. So, the deal goes down like this. Though, there was one client I remember very specifically. Well, we want to start paying a dividend. A little one, but we want to start paying a dividend. So, the problem here is that once you start paying the dividend, you can't just decide you're not going to do it. Once you do that first declaration of a dividend, you've got those people hooked on that dividend. And the investors, if you say, well, the next year comes, well, we're not going to be able to pay a dividend this year. Oh, they will spank you hard. Your stock price will drop. They will beat you because you gave a dividend and now you can't. What's going on in this company? So once you start paying a dividend, you are in the program. Another thing, though, too, is that companies aim, first of all, for stability of dividend. The next highly desirable goal is to have a growth of the dividend. And even better is to have a constant growth of the dividend. The aim of a company isn't just to pay a dividend. It's to pay a dividend consistently and to grow that dividend as the company itself grows, so that there is a constant in the expectation of a dividend and a constant in the growth rate of that dividend. Hence, we can value some stocks that have a constant growth rate by a variation on the perpetuity formula called the constant growth perpetuity formula. And I've showed it to you before here. The price of a constant growth stock, and it's going to be the dividend one period out. Make sure, put an arrow on that. One period out. Not the dividend that just was declared, but the next one. Over the return expected by the market minus the growth rate of the dividend. Now, this dividend one period out is going to be the current dividend grown one period. In other words, you grow it one period off where it is now. You got to make sure you do that. Because if they say, well, the growth rate is 10% on the dividends, and they just paid a 25-cent dividend, you would need, for the formula, 25 cents times 1.10, 1 plus 10%. In other words, you need to put it one period out. That is the most common mistake when you're doing these problems. Other than that, this is really stupid math. This is just arithmetic kind of math. But I'm going to show you something here right now.
I'm going to show you something here right now. I'm going to pull up a company that is stable, aggressively growing. In my judgment, even though the beta is low, relatively low at 0.85, the company has a substantial risk component to it. So you're going to see me whack this guy with a pretty serious R-sub-E, expected return on equity. Discount rate for the expected future cash flows. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the Edgar filings, and I'm going to have a look here at Starbucks, S-Bucks. I'm going to go for the 10K because what I'm going to look for the dividend for the past couple of years and see what it is, but also see what its growth pattern is. And so I'm going to look at the 10Ks to do this. Okay, now, and trust me, I'm doing this on purpose this way, because sometimes you have to kind of paw around for the, look at all these financial statements. The cool thing is that in Edgar, you can download all this as one giant multi-tab Excel sheet. So when you're doing research projects for other classes, yeah, this is how you do it. And then you've got all the data right there, and then you can make your pretty charts and things like that. Pawing around here, I'm thinking maybe the consolidated statements of equity. Oh, hey. Oh, I did it. Who's good? Okay, you see the dividends there? Now, I want you to see something. I want you to watch something. I'm going to look at what the growth rate of the dividend is. So the way I would do it is I'd say, all right, let's look at the dividend from 2012 to 2013. Now, is that 89 cents? Okay, I would divide, okay, that's 17 cent jump. So I'd take 17 cents divided by 89 to see how much it grew, okay? If I do 17 divided by 89, $0.17 divided by 72. Jeez. I get a 23.6. I want you to do that. If you've got a calculator, I want you to do it because something interesting is about to happen. I promise you. In other words, it jumps 17 cents off 72 cents, so I just take 17 divided by 72. 17 divided by 72 gets me 17 cents divided by 72 cents got me 23.6% growth. Now, from 2013 to 2014, it went from 89 cents to $1.10. That's a 21 cent jump off 89 cents. Well, spank me, Jesus. Look at that. Do you see it? Starbucks has a constant growth dividend policy. It's holding the growth rate of the dividend constant. Like I said, that's a goal of a company, because not only are you going to give a dividend, not only are you going to give it every year, not only are you going to grow it, but the investors can expect the dividend to grow at a constant rate. That is important because that means that we can value this stock by a very straightforward formula. That formula over there, the constant growth in dividend formula for a perpetuity. Ancient math matched with dividend policy of a modern corporation. It's growing. You're actually physically, visually seeing a dividend policy being set by the board of directors. They're saying we're going to grow the dividend 23.6% per year, at least as long as they can. And that's all that matters to us is for the foreseeable future. So, now my thing here is, like I said,
based on market expectations of the return to the market portfolio, where treasuries are going to be going over the next year or so, and the risk that Starbucks has inherent in its business model and in its business itself, I'm going to put a 26% discount rate on it. Now, I am, yes, pulling this out of my ass, but I'm using it. I have an educated ass, okay? It's got a degree. So this is partly, I'm just guessing it, but it's really behind the scenes. I kind of know where I can, I'm giving a ballpark that's what I think would be reasonable, okay? So the first thing we're going to have to do is the dividend that they just paid, if I'm looking there, it was $1.10. So for the formula, so D0, right now it's $1.10, but we don't use that for the formula. We've got to grow it one period. So the one for the formula would be $1.10 times 1 plus 0.236, the growth rate of those dividends. So we need to know what the next dividend is going to be. The formula uses the next dividend. Okay? So once I've gotten that, and for God's sake, watch out with rounding. Rounding will kill you. Just key it in hard and then round at the end. Otherwise, you can clip off too much. I had a couple of students bitch because of the error factor that's allowed in those problems. Yeah, we have to do it that way, unfortunately, because if we get it wrong by a couple of pennies on a $10 million order, well, that's my paycheck for about a month. Okay, so going with it, the price value of Starbucks right now should be $1.10 grown one period at 23.6% divided by 0.26 minus 0.236. Now remember, do that in parentheses. Don't forget to put parentheses around that denominator. And I'm telling you that because I am terrible at remembering that myself. Okay, honking that out. One point one times 1.236 divided by open parentheses 0.26 less 0.236 close the parentheses equals I'm getting 56.65. Is that correct? 56.65 on the price. Let's see how good I am. My Starbucks would be $300 or some crap like that. Let's see SBUX. Huh? Jeez, not bad. That's so good, my name should be Candy. Okay, anyway. Look, I'm valuing the stock. By the way, notice that it's not what the market's saying, but it ain't too damn bad right now. Okay? So I say, based on my numbers, that the stock price should be $56.65, but the stock price the market's calling right now is $58.72. Again, I'm not too far off. Now, here's the thing. And I'm just going to ask this, knowing very well what you will say. Madam, do you believe me or do you believe your lying eyes? Good. Absolutely. Outstanding. Outstanding. And you're, of course, oh, hell, I don't believe you. The market's got 10 billion people. Look, suppose that when I'm doing real valuation, I am doing this for blood. I'm doing it here in the classroom just for the purpose of teaching you how to do this and showing you how fun our world, our finance can be. But if I actually were doing this for blood, for money, for real life, and I found that by my calculations the price should be $56.65, and the market right now is saying the price should be $58.77, I am seeing that this stock is overvalued. Now, am I right? Well, I'm unfortunately the kind of person who will put down a lake and walk across it. That's how much I think of myself and my analysis. Now, if this is the case, though, what do you do? And I'm going to reach out there. Madam, what would you do in a situation like this? If you have found that the value is 50, you think the value is 56.65, but the price is well above that. What would you do? Do you know, well, let me ask you this. Would you know what to do in a situation like that? You would have no idea. In fact, it's done all the time, and it's the thing that hardly anyone talks about. Everyone thinks about buying stock. Everyone says, buy stock, sell stock. I don't have Starbucks. I have none of that stock. I buy their coffee, but I don't buy their stock. Well, what can I do to take advantage of this? I short sell. Short selling is the other side of buying. In the stock market, every stock, there will be people buying it, investors buying it. There will be people selling it, but there will also be people short selling it. Short selling is looking at short interest tells you how much sentiment there is of overvaluation. So I'll show you some short interest here in a minute, but here's how short interest works. What I do is I think that this stock is overvalued. I just reach into the pool of all of this stock that's out there, and I borrow, let's say, 100 shares. I borrow them. I just take them, borrow them, and then I sit back and wait for the market to drop the stock to where I think it should be. And then I buy them to cover myself because I didn't own them. I just borrowed them. I have to buy them, and I give them back to the market. That's kind of a simplified version of it, but that's a short sell. A short sell is a bet against a stock. I borrow the stock. I don't own it. And so when I sell it, so when I give it back, what I've got to do is essentially I have got to have that stock. So that's a short sell. So I would short this stock and wait to see if the market corrected. And so in other words, what you might want to do is look at short interest outstanding on different stocks and on indices to see what the market sentiment is. Because you might see the stock market going up, a market index, or a price of a given stock going up, 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 up. But if you look at the short interest, it might be expanding at the same time. So in other words, the crowd is cheering, but the naysayers are cheering too. The problem is that we don't hear about the naysayers, those typical stock market reports and those ticker screens and those talking heads on TV and radio. They don't mention short interest, and it is the other side of the game. Let me see if I can do something here. I'm going to type in short interest. I'm probably going to be sorry about it. Short interest. Short interest heads, trending stocks. That's not short interest. Come on, really? I want to see short interest on something. Show me I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to just do it this way. Google.com. I'm going to just type in short interest and see if I can get. Notice, by the way, it's not even that easy to get this. NASDAQ short interest. Now, the NASDAQ, as I told you. Okay, this is short interest. Last sale, share volume. That's not doing me any good at all. That's not telling me anything. Short interest. Oh, here we go. Short squeeze. Really? Okay. Short sale volume. Naked short selling. Okay, shares short. Okay, there's some short interest information here. Let's look at SBUX. Huh, interesting. The volume today is still pretty light, but the average volume on short interest is 8 million short interest. Now, let me go back here, see if I can actually back up. Remember that 8 million? The average volume on buying and selling in the normal place market is 9 million. The short interest is almost as large as all of the buying and selling on average for a few months. That's happening on a lot of stocks. It's not just Starbucks. I am seeing short interest widening, enlarging on a number of important good stocks. In other words, the bulls and the bears. The bulls are still winning the fight. You are a matador. Ta-da! The bull has tossed your cookies around quite a bit. However, there's a bear that is coming toward everyone. The bears are the ones who are the naysayers, the negatives, the ones who say that everything is going to go to hell in a handbasket. And if you look across short interest of stocks, you will see that short interest since August has been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It seems to have stabilized in the last few days, but that might be a calm before the storm. So when you hear all these talking heads saying, oh, the stock market is still going up, you think to yourself, you dumbasses, there's another side to this story. Because as bright as the day is, if the night gets dark enough, you'll walk off a cliff before you ever get to the next daybreak. That's all I have for you. Go home.